With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay in the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at The Only Colors. Today is Wednesday, January 25th, and boy, we're really in it now, huh, John? The doldrums, the grind of a regular season Big Ten schedule are very much upon us.
I'm so annoyed at Purdue because they alone are being middle of the road Purdue away from one of the greatest Big Ten championship chases of all time, where there would be like 12 teams competing for the championship with a top record of 12-8. Like that is what would have been on the line. But no, they allegedly are allegedly good. They're ranked number one, and I'm just so out. I am just so out on that. But
no season in any sport, either collegiate sport, has ever taught us no one is good like this year is teaching us no one is good. Because truly, if that Purdue team is the best team in the country, which it appears to be very much in the conversation just based on the college basketball I've watched, yet they're number one, but they're also objectively not that good.
Well, and like
put them in the category of good.
No, and you look around and you're like, okay, so Houston, and they're like, yeah, we could be good. And then they lose at home to Temple. Like, what are you doing? And then you look around and you're like, okay, is it Alabama? And MSU played Alabama, and did that look like the number one team in the country? And I know it was early season, but come on. No way. The funny part is that somebody allegedly has to win it all this year. And it's going to be one of the worst national champions of all time. When they do those best national champions list, they might just say, let's keep out the 2023 guys. That was like an intramural chip.
Yeah, this is like one of two things is going to happen. Either some extremely random team is going to win, which I'm all for, but
love it.
Just for the record, would love to see that. Or it's going to be one of those where Arizona or Kansas, sure, or UCLA, these blue blood programs that are sitting at the bottom of the top 10 right now, find a way to do it. And then it'll be one of those seasons you look back at and you're like comparing all the all-time Kansas teams. And you're like, this is maybe the 25th best Kansas team ever. And they won a national championship.
It's so true. I mean, in the back of my head, I kept thinking all season, this would be the year where Gonzaga would win it all. Like they are not good, but they finally break through in the year where they're not even up to their own standards of good. I don't know. There is a lot of fun basketball. I think maybe we got to break out the teams we don't want to play list, but we will only do that if we feel comfortable about Michigan State's NCAA tournament situation, which at the time, right now, I'm not comfortable, not uncomfortable, but this past week didn't move us in any specific direction, beating Rutgers at home and then losing on the road at Indiana. In my head, you did what was expected in both of those games, unfortunately. But let's start with the Rutgers game. A 70-57 win over one of the best, if not the best, defensive teams Michigan State has played this year. Everyone got really excited about this one. I think there are a lot of people really nervous about this game. And I just want to set the stage for you here. It's Rutgers. And I'm so sorry, but like as a program taking a 30,000 put.
See, John's dog is even upset that people are getting excited about Rutgers. To build on the point before he returns that I know he was going to make. You back?
Oh, yeah. We had a little.
Our top-notch production value continues.
We had a mailman situation here while he wanted to get on the board. He was pretty upset about the Rutgers situation, too, because our fan base got a little too nervous about Rutgers. And I will talk down about Rutgers. I don't care that they are plucky, that they're frisky. I think Picheel's got them in the exact right direction. And I think they would be right to keep into a lifetime contract, but he's going to get plucked soon because he knows how to create a really nice defense. What I'm getting at is Rutgers has never beaten Michigan State in East Lansing. And until they do, I just can't take them very seriously. I just can't do it. Can't have your best player, Cam Spencer, a transfer from Loyola, Maryland. Can't have it. Not for me. So I just – you did what you should do. You beat them, 70-57. A good win, a win you should expect to do as a Michigan State program team because you are top to bottom better from a talent perspective. Austin, Wally and I can cede the floor to you for your takes.
Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this one. And unfortunately, as it stands right now, this is probably Michigan State's, I don't know, second, third best win of the season. So right on one hand, right? I mean, it's because Kentucky is a complete mess. It's definitely the win at Wisconsin has got to be their best win of the year. And after that, it's a bunch of midness.
Well, it's tough because, they're going to argue, you should all argue that they were without their best player, and you could say, well, Michigan State was missing, as well. At the end of the day, there's always going to be injuries, I suppose. But, the best win probably right now, at Penn State, will they make the tournament? That's in question.
That's what I'm saying. So, yes, it's Rutgers, and I completely and totally agree with you from a program perspective. This is what you should expect to do. I don't care if Rutgers is number one in the country, which if it ever happens, I don't even know. I'm just getting hammered drunk before that game. This is what you're supposed to do. So on one hand, yes. On the other hand, this is also one of Michigan State's best wins and probably one that will look good, come Selection Sunday when I think Michigan State is going to maybe not need help, but help separating maybe at the very least.
Yep.
But I also, you look at the Big Ten and it is hysterical, like top to bottom. MSU sitting here at 5-4 in the conference and they're half a game out of second place. I mean, Purdue's going to run away with this, but the rest of this is really couldn't be more mid. I mean, Michigan sitting here at 11-8, and yet they're tied for second place in the conference at 5-3. They're probably not going to make the tournament, and yet there they are. So really weird conference going on this year. In terms of this game specifically, I mean,
the Jackson Kohler game.
Michigan State. I mean, listen, Jackson Kohler erupted in this one. 12 points, 11 rebounds. Three blocks. I'm going to say that this is the first time all season in my mind that he has looked like a college basketball player. Mm-hmm. And it was quite a way to erupt on the scene. And quite honestly, Michigan State needed it. Matty Sissoko didn't do much of anything. Only played 16 minutes in this one, mostly because Kohler, you know, did really play so well. He did so without fouling. He only had one foul in the game. But yeah, he did a great job. This is a really balanced effort, though. Not an overly efficient effort. Hogard, Walker, and Akins all shooting, you know, at best 4 for 10. This is a nice game from Joey, though, with 13 points, made 3 out of his 4 three-point attempts. I really think MSU just kind of benefited from Rutgers having a terrible night. Now, part of that is just because Michigan State is a pretty decent defensive team. But, I mean, Spencer goes 1 of 8 from 3. Omar Rui only makes 5 of his 13 attempts. McConnell, the point guard, goes 4 of 11. They brought Andre Hyatt off the bench, a 6'6 junior, and he goes 0 for 7 from the field. I mean, Rutgers just had a very Rutgers night, 2 of 17 from deep. So all in all, just kind of what you'd expect to see out of Michigan State teams against Rutgers for the most part. And a good bounce back after 2 lead at Illinois and then what probably should have been a home win against, at the time, number 3 Purdue.
Yeah, I mean, Kota Wuda, they're behind you, and you're up 9 on the road at Illinois, tanked it, up 1 against Purdue at home with 10 seconds left. I mean, you're right there. You know you can do it. You know you can play with the alleged best teams in the country when you are full strength. You just got to prove – if this is what bothers me, it shouldn't take getting punched in the mouth, and that's what happened at Indiana. Quickly note, this will carry over from the Rutgers to Indiana game. Jaden Akins defensively is being asked to guard the best player, guard and wing on the other team, and he's doing a pretty nice job. You know, he was a big reason for Cam Spencer being a mess. It's hard when you're asking Jaden Akins to do both, be a defensive menace and needing to contribute double digits on the offensive side of the ball. I don't know if he's there yet, if that's a thing you can ask of him. I do know he's not there yet. It's not his fault. I think that's where you're missing a guy like a full roster, not just Malik Hall, just a full roster, where you don't have to ask guys to do multiple things. You're asking guys to do one thing really well. You're asking, you know, Matty Sissoko, just focus on rebounding. Just focus on just rebound the ball. Pop the ball. Don't worry about anything else. You know, AJ, run the offense. Get to the bucket. Everyone, we all know what everyone's good at. We all know what they're all very bad at. And if they're all capable of playing and doing the thing they're really good at, they've proven to be a decent team and even a nice team. So we carry it over to at Indiana. And it was nice to see Michigan State hang in a tough environment. But here's what really bothered me about this one. I don't know if it bothered you. I don't think we've talked about this. There were multiple lapses from a specific player. And I hate picking on people, but when you are the leader, when you are the point guard in a Tom Izzo program, one that has gone to 24 straight NCAA tournaments, if you want to do anything, if you want to actually win games, if you want to make the tournament and win games in the tournament, you don't get to take plays off. You do not get to have mental lapses. And we saw it happen, unfortunately. And I can remember specific instances, and I would encourage people to fast forward if you're easily triggered. But, he, you know, what happened on for the first was there was a collapse on Trace Jackson Davis, which is what you wanted. He kicks it out, and then everyone is supposed to rotate accordingly. And the guy that collapsed on the ball is going to go the opposite side of the court to take away the last swing pass. So everyone's moving over one. AJ just didn't do it. Just didn't even go over one. Indiana cans an open 3. And you're like, okay, that was bad. Let's make sure to never do that again. Well, that's worth 3 points. He followed a 9% three-point shooter. No reason to do that. A 9% three-point shooter, which was one of the reasons he got two fouls and was auto-benched. That's on you, AJ. You followed a guy who can't shoot, and now he got 2 points out of it. That's 5 points right there. And then he missed both free throws on a trip. Missing one's fine. Missing two, it's a mental lapse. So right there, that's 7 points out of the gate. And it's not all on one player. But when that's your point guard, the leader, the vocal, it's a road game at Indiana. And here's what, and you know, I'll pass it back to you here. But here's what really bummed me out is after the game, being asked about how chippy and physical it got, Michigan State was kind of shocked that Indiana was punking them. And because they hadn't really had bad blood or beef. Guess what? That's how it works in this league. And if you need to get a lesson, that's too bad. Because in this league, it's Michigan State's league. So if you're shocked that you go into an away environment and people are coming at you and pushing and punching and biting you just for being you, I don't know what to tell you. The target's on your back. It always will be. And to be shocked by that shows me another mental lapse. You got to come out and be the aggressor. And because everyone's gunning for you. And that was really a bummer thing to realize, because in the past, I don't feel like you had to beg people to be the aggressor. But maybe I'm just that's revisionist history. Maybe that's wishful thinking. And maybe this was the punch in the arm that the team needed. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, a couple of points. The criticism of AJ is warranted. I mean, he did not have a good game in this one. Didn't do really all that much impactful kind of throughout the game. And if he's going to be the leader in the face, which I think we see part of the frustration is we see flashes of that from him. And when you do, typically the team benefits by and large from that. But we did not get that in this game. The only thing I'll say to this team's defense is that they were looking tired. They've been playing a lot of games in a very short period of time, such as life in the Big Ten, especially in a year like this where, you know, it's a pretty level playing field, all things considered. This is going to catch up to you at some point. And when you're a flawed roster like Michigan State, it's going to catch up to you. So slightly in their defense, I will say that. But the flip side of it, the point about leadership and the point about being surprised that you're getting punched in the mouth, that kind of harkens back, honestly, to like last year's stuff where you just sensed this like sort of aloof, like not locked in mentality from this team. And while I think the main perpetrators of that in Gabe Brown and Mark Spingham are no longer there, you still feel like that's kind of hanging over this program a little bit. And it's so frustrating because it flies in the face of everything that Tom Izzo has built at Michigan State. Like you said, it's his league. It's MSU's league for a reason, because they are the ones that bring that grit, that bring that fight, that execute well, that defend, that hustle, that dive, that get out and run, that play these impossible schedules. Like, that's who they are. It's who they've always been. It's the identity of the program. And yet, especially over the last 2 years, you just honestly, since Aaron Henry left, that say what you want about Aaron Henry's final year and how awful that was to watch. He was a dog. He brought a mentality of I am going to literally will this team to the NCAA tournament. And that is exactly what he did. And since he left, it feels like there's no big bad bully on the roster to help whip some of these guys into shape. And again, look at the five guys that start. Like Tyson Walker, tons of credit to him. He's a transfer. I know it's his second year, but he's clearly not like a super vocal dude. Hogard should be that guy. Akins is not that guy. Sissoko's super emotional, but like not a leader. And Izzo leaders are always guards. And then Joey Hauser is a very reserved guy, and then anybody that's coming off the bench, I mean, right now it's basically all Think about the four players, the five players that came off the bench against Indiana are Jackson Kohler, freshman, looks like he's 6 years old. Mm-hmm. Carson Cooper, freshman, is literally the third string center. Trey Holloman is probably the fourth ball handler, freshman. Pierre Brooks, for all intents and purposes, a freshman. And then Jason Wittens, who is, again, credit to him for getting in there and getting a rebound in this 1 minute, but not going to be a leader. So there's this leadership void on this team. And there's a very obvious candidate to fill it, and it's A.J. Hogard. And what we haven't seen from him is the night in, night out ability to do that. And he's not a freshman. He's not a sophomore. This is a junior who has played a lot of basketball. And the only way for Michigan State to fulfill what potential they have this year is for him to take that mantle. And games like this in late January in a competitive league are the opportunity to do that on tired legs. Go in, bounce back, you know, or keep a win streak going, I should say, and win a tough game in a tough road environment. It's not for a lack of trying overall, but like they just let themselves get kind of beat. They look tired. It feels like this is a story that happens at Indiana a lot, quite honestly, for Michigan State. But frustrating stuff. Now, what shouldn't surprise people, and what I feel like, John, we hear a lot recently, it's kind of a yearly thing, is, oh, why is Michigan State, you know, they've lost three out of their last four. Are they going to pull it together? Are they going to make the tournament? I hate hearing that from fans. And I think you feel specifically pointed about this point, that people seem to be like, you know, surprised or disappointed that this is happening to a Michigan State program at this point in the season. I don't know. I'm not surprised. Are you?
Comes with the territory. If you're new to this, I would encourage you to take tonight and just take a peek back at the schedules of the last 20 seasons. And it's just how it works. It's a January lull. There are a lot of reasons for it. You've got big games that happen at the beginning of the year, freshmen that played in those big games and are now getting comfortable in their minutes in regular games, which leads to wonky lineups sometimes on purpose from Izzo, by the way. You know, there's reasons you'll see the wonky lineups to see how they handle it. because when push comes to shove in games that really matter, sometimes the wonky lineups happen outside of your control, you know? So it's good to get different opportunities and groups out there. You want to win every game, but at the end of the day, you do also need to see how things mesh together, because plan A, your first plan, rarely does it execute to perfection all the way to the end of the game, especially in the tournament. So you got to be at least tried and true on a lot of different scenarios that take place. Also, you mentioned the fatigue factor. November fatigue carries over. It does. And then when you play six games in 16 days, that's going to affect you too. It's not an excuse. It's just reality. The team's not talented enough to overcome any type of, you know.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Amount of games in that short of time. Fortunately, the Big Ten's not that great this year. We've talked about it. Michigan State is one of the teams that's in similar to about eight other ones. And so you'd like to think the difference, though, that changes in February is that Michigan State teams do know how to win and can find a different gear. And that's why Izzo is a Hall of Famer, is he's going to get out of them what maybe an average coach at a different university hasn't learned yet or doesn't know how to do, or maybe never learns how to do. So I'm not worried about where they're going, because I think you can see the offense has actually been pretty good. The defense has not been great of late. But the execution versus Purdue defensively was what they wanted to do. They're doing what you want, what the coaches want to happen. It just didn't hit shots in the Indiana game. And prior to that, I believe it was the first time they didn't make a three in a game when they were at Illinois, a game that they were up 9. That's to me an anomaly, especially for a team that shoots as well as it does from 3. So not excuses, just realities. So that said, you can drop these next 2 games versus Iowa at Purdue, and that's a different switch of worry. My point is, I don't know if we've seen that in the past to warrant the worry yet. On the flip side of that is that Michigan State can punch their NCAA tournament ticket. They're 25th straight by the end of the weekend. That's on the table too. But first thing, you know, with the game home against Iowa and then at Purdue. But before we get into those previews, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think if you want to be frustrated with something, it shouldn't be that Michigan State's losing these games necessarily. Like, to your point, John, they're executing for the most part on what the coaches want to do. And quite honestly, yes, you're frustrated by AJ Hogard not stepping up and taking this lead role. But this team is basically performing to, I don't know, kind of like the max of its capability. Maybe not the max, but like not that far from the top of what they have available to them. Look up and down the roster. Again, I just listed the 5 players that came off the bench at Indiana. Like,
and then you add
those are not players that should be playing minutes. They shouldn't. They're playing entirely too many, top to bottom, just for not necessarily for the caliber, but for like it's not to disparage these guys, but you shouldn't be expecting. Put it this way. Brooks, Kohler, Cooper, and Holloman are what I think you and I would call 4-year players, right? Guys that are really going to ripen on the vine and be really good, solid contributors by years 3 and 4, much like an AJ Hogard, for example, an Aaron Henry, even to a, maybe a lesser degree. He was more of an impact as a freshman, but like those types of guys are not the ones that you want to be throwing in for 18 minutes on the road in Indiana, like Jackson Kohler was, despite how good he was the game before. Like, you do not want to be putting them in these pressure situations. Even Trey Holloman, like, you don't want to be having him play 13 minutes in these types of tough games. This roster is playing the hand that it's dealt. And if you want to get frustrated, and I've said it before, you should get frustrated with the man who put this roster together, and that is Tom Izzo. And again, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, he's lost his touch. Oh, he's, you know, get him out of here, anything like that. But if you, there is one man that's responsible at the end of the day for deciding how to allocate scholarships, which recruits to try and go chase, assess the strengths and weaknesses of a run given of a roster given going into any single year. And he did that here. And what he left himself with was a thin bench, a team that cannot survive if there's one key injury, like we've seen with Malik Hall. Huge development. Him being out basically the whole year has kneecapped this team. That is, again, not good. Malik Hall, another one of those 4-year players, meaning he's not going one and done to the NBA. He's a great contributor. We've seen what he's done for this roster. But if he is the thing that's derailing everything, that is not good. That is not the sign of a healthy roster. So if you want to get frustrated now with the players, get frustrated with the coaches, and hope that they can, and I think we've seen that they will, remedy things moving forward.
I think there's an opportunity to do it. We have seen this team play really well. Not really well. That's an overstatement. We've seen this team play decent basketball when they are all healthy and humming. Now, I think what the most important thing here is to make sure that that can happen in March. February and leading up to March, right? And that's where you're going to see probably a conservative approach to getting Malik Hall back because of his foot injury. When you have I think what I have as a positive is between Hauser, Walker, Hogard, Sissoko, Akins, and Hall, you feel pretty good about that group. Not great. Mm-hmm. You're not going to walk onto most courts and have the best player. In fact, most of the games they play, that's going to be the case. They will not have the best player on the floor moving forward. But they're going to have the better rotation. And that's going to have to win the game. And so when they get that rotation back, I think it will round into form nicely. I think you will see, if you can be patient, a February run coming. But like we talked about, there's a couple games to go before something like that can happen. And if they get lucky, the ticket could be punched before that run. But as we said, first things first, home versus Iowa.
To quickly build on your point there, really quickly, that team you mentioned, that core group of guys, if all healthy and humming and coached really well, can win a lot of games. Yep. They can be, I think, one of the top few teams within your conference. But two things you have to ask yourself. One is, what could you add to that really easily that could raise the floor? And the answer to that, I think, is a guy like Julius Marble. I'm probably going to get roasted because he was not great last year. But guess what? If you can keep him around for another year, his senior year, instead of letting him go to Texas A&M and average double figure scoring and almost 5 rebounds a game, you don't have to play Carson Cooper those minutes. And you don't have to play Jackson Kohler those minutes. And you, instead of having to play even smaller at the four or play Joey Hauser 35 minutes a game, get weird with your rotation, play two bigs at the same time. And you give yourself so much more room. So when I talk about little roster tweaks, that's the type of stuff that's frustrating, because that seemingly should be a pretty, you didn't even have to go get somebody new. You just had to not lose somebody for that to be the case. So there's that. And then the second thing is, are you, as a program and as a fan base and as a team, happy with that? Are you happy with being one of the better teams in the conference? Or are you going to hold yourself to the standard that you've created over the past nearly 30 years as a head coach, which is to compete for a championship in your conference and compete to go deep in March every single year? Because you are the only thing keeping yourself they're not necessarily keeping themselves from that. They could still make a run to the Sweet 16 and do something weird. We've seen it before. I'm sure it'll happen again eventually. Hopefully we won't need it to happen again, but it could. Hopefully that'll just be the expectation. But you've hamstrung yourself for no good reason. Right now, these games that you're losing, blowing a late lead at home against Purdue, dropping a 9-point lead on the road against Illinois, and more or less no showing in the second half against Indiana, those outcomes are driven by these decisions that have been made. So I'm probably done rehashing the past after this episode, because I feel like we've really gotten it out of our systems. There's no point anymore. But that's why we are where we are, in an honest, reading of the cards. John. Well,
no, that's
should we move forward?
Yeah, we should, because everyone keeps pointing to, the talent will come next year, and we'll get to that, right? But nothing's guaranteed. This year still has to happen. Who knows what happens with the roster? Who knows? There's a million, variables. So to just assume things will all just be the same next year with an influx of talent that we all hope will happen, I think that's, you got to get there first. And for the team to be competitive, to the standard that Tom Izzo and the fan base think they can be and should be, a lot of the guys on this roster got to get a lot better at those one thing that they're right now good at. They got to become great at. One thing that I think AJ Hogard is good at and will have to continue to get even better at is especially against a guard heavy Iowa team is getting fouled. You know, one thing that Michigan State has not done a great job this year is get fouled. And that's a skill. And when I say get fouled, forcing the referee to get involved and forcing them to blow the whistle, going to initiate contact in the lane with the ball offensively. One of the reasons you see such dominant performances over and over from the center on the other team, not necessarily all because Maddie and Carson Cooper aren't playing decent defense. I think Jackson Kohler is unfortunately not playing decent defense, but it's because they are never in foul trouble. And the reason that the opposing team centers are never in foul trouble is because referees are not in any way needing to call fouls on them because we have no post presence on offense. We rarely run the offense on the block through anyone but AJ Hogard and occasionally Malik Hall. And so the other team's rotation is exactly what they want it to be every game. And so when you have that, well, the opposing team centers are going to keep going back to the well and they're going to get what they get on offense and they never have to sit because of foul trouble on the defensive end. So this team's going to have to either figure out how to get better at getting fouled or you're going to probably continue to see more of the same. Iowa's best player, one of their best players, Philip Rabraka, a smaller center than the ones Michigan State has been used to going up against recently, I don't think is going to be nearly as dominant as we talked about a guard heavy, want to get up and down type of play. This is a game that I don't want to call it a must win, but it feels very winnable. And between Rabraka, Chris Murray, McCaffrey, and Perkins, they have a nice team, but I like to think that Michigan State's, as we talked about, the seven guys that we talked about, our Michigan State's top seven is better than their top seven. It just is. So this is one you got to feel, like I said, not a must win, but one that it's going to be more winnable than a lot of the others on the schedule. And one where if Michigan State continues to play and execute and just make the average amount of shots that they have been making through the season, you feel pretty good about the opportunity here. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is a team that's, you know, somehow Iowa manages to just get one super standout player, it feels like, all the time. Recently, last year, it was Keegan Murray, and then it was obviously Luca Garza before that. And now, apparently, Chris spent some time with his brother in the gym, which, smart move on his part.
Sure.
Because he's already carving up the NBA.
But it's literally a poor man's Murray. Yeah. Just like Jordan Davis is kind of a poor man's Johnny Davis. It's
right, exactly. I think is with this, I completely agree with, despite the recent kind of hot streak that Iowa's on, that this is a game Michigan State should win. I don't think we need to beat around the bush. I mean, I look at Iowa. And really, since the turn of the since it turned into December, they did have a nice win against Iowa State, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I look at their losses since then, and it's lost Wisconsin, no shame there. But then it's home against Eastern Illinois.
They were
Nebraska. They lost by 16 to Nebraska. And they lost at home, like at Penn State. Again, I don't know that Penn State is necessarily like obviously not as bad as they once were, but like that's not a great loss. And then their wins, you know, they beat Indiana, they won at Rutgers, which is a nice win. They beat Michigan in overtime. I don't think Michigan's much of a team. And then they just did beat Maryland and then turn around and got waxed by Ohio State. So again, this is the Big Ten this year, so it's like super all over the place. I don't think anybody's really distinctly better than anyone else, kind of Purdue honestly pretty much included in that despite where they stand right now. And this is a home game. This is a home game against a team that you, I think, are at least as good, if not better than, and you should win this game. I think, you know, it's funny. You and I have been talking about it. It feels like I've been waiting for this team to get my attention and to like give me a reason to be like, okay, you know what? I'm going to get more bullish on where this could go. And they almost had me. Actually, they did have me after winning on the road to Wisconsin. I was like, okay, I'm listening. You have a chance to really win me over and get me super, super bullish. If you can win at Illinois, they blew that one. And then I was like, okay, that's all right. That's a tough road game against a good program. Come home and beat Purdue. Now I'm all the way in. Blow that one. With Rutgers, nice win. Indiana, it didn't move me. This Iowa game, it's not one of those that's going to get me feeling bullish again, but it is one of those that would make me feel like, okay, we at least know where the floor is. This is a game you should, much like Rutgers, in my opinion, you should win at home.
Yeah, at the end of the day, look, this is a jersey check. Look down at your jersey. They're going to look down at theirs. Grow up. Like, this is a home game against Iowa basketball. Grow up. And that's, if you want to be serious, if you want to go to the NCAA tournament, you win games like this. It's that, it's quite literally that simple. And then you put yourself in a position to punch a ticket at Purdue. That, if you don't, now you're looking at an ugly hole, you know, losing at home to Iowa and then needing to play at Purdue, a program that you haven't won in Mackey since Adrian Payne was a senior.
Man.
You've lost to that pro. You could make an argument it's Purdue's league.
Mm-hmm.
Of late, you know, they especially against Michigan State, they've won 6 of the last 7 against the Spartans and 5 straight at home versus Michigan State.
Wow.
So they are Matt Painter. Can't win when it matters, but he does have a stranglehold on this Big Ten right now.
Yeah.
It's reality.
But that is that first part is why it is perceived as,
yeah,
still as Michigan State's.
Exactly. Exactly. So we can talk about Purdue as much as you want, but the game plan worked to perfection last time. This time around, I think I don't know how realistic it is going to be for Purdue to shoot, I don't say as poorly, because it wasn't awful, I don't think. Yeah, they were 4 for 10 from 3. But they gave, I think it was Ethan Morton, every shot he wanted. Yeah, he went 0 for 7 and 0 for 3 from 3. And that was the game plan. They're going to do that again. I don't know if he goes 0 for again. I don't think he does. This is a game where you're going to need somebody like Joey Hauser to do something special. And I want to do a quick note about Joey. I saw something out of him in the Indiana game. RIP, he got dunked on, dude. First, and I feel bad about that. That was, he got yammed on. He shouldn't have jumped. That's our only rule, man.
Right. I mean, come on. But follow the rules.
I will say, I saw a fire out of him that I had never seen. And I bring that up because sometimes you see that out of a senior, and once the year turns and you start to look at the calendar and you start to realize how many games you have left in your career, and a new gear is found. I saw out of Joey a little more. I just saw emotion. I'd never seen any. So I'm just going to put that on the board here to keep an eye out, because I think he could really take on new gear on. He's one of the guys that needs to take it to his next level. If this team's going to do anything, he and AJ are it, but I think he's the one that can really find a new gear. We saw him when they run stuff for him and he's in that little zone and he gets locked in. It's trouble for the other team. I think Purdue is the type of team that he can feel comfortable doing that against, because they're not overly athletic, and that's what frustrates him. So if there's ever an opportunity for him to get going, it's going to be to rack up some points against Iowa, who's happy to give them up, by the way. And then a little, hopefully, confidence booster heading into the House of Horrors that is Mackey Arena. But it's the doldrums of January, man, like we talked about. It's part of the process. And it's what makes March so fun. Hopefully, man, it'd be nice to punch a ticket this week, but a long way to go.
Yeah, and Purdue makes me a little bit nervous. I'll be honest. Road game against the number one team in the country makes you nervous. That's genius right there. Mm-hmm. But it is shaping up. It's a game where Izzo's going to need to have an A-plus effort, really. Yep. I think one thing that we've noticed about Matt Painter kind of throughout the course of his career is that he doesn't adjust. Just really doesn't. Like, they kind of play their game and that's it. And that's fine. That's a mentality that's won a lot of teams a lot of games. But Izzo is kind of the king of adjusting and changing things on the fly. And I think, you know, that'll be kind of the deciding factor in this game, because you can't expect, like you said, I don't think we can expect Tyson Walker to throw up another 30 spot.
You hit it on the head. You hit it on the head. Purdue doesn't have to adjust, and they will win more games than they lose. And then they get to March, and for the first time in their lives, they probably can't win with plan A, and they've never adjusted all season.
Right.
And guess what happens? There's a pant shitting on their sideline. Yeah. And guess what happens usually on Michigan State sideline? They've been adjusting the entire year and hopefully it works out. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's levels to what you just said, though.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that it'll really be an interesting manifestation of that this week. I'll throw something out there that I kind of expect. Mm-hmm. I expect them to try and throw the ball down to Matty Sissoko and do exactly what you just talked about earlier on that the centers have not done at all this year. And that's try to get Zach Edey, any opposing big man, but in this case, Zach Edey, into foul trouble.
Yeah.
He had zero fouls. He did not commit a foul in the game last week. And that is, first of all, bad officiating. There's just no chance that that's the case. And B, it's very damning to Michigan State that they were not able to draw a single foul on him. So I will not be surprised at all / kind of expect, whether it's the right basketball decision or not, as a tone setting measure, Matty Sissoko to get the ball on the block. I expect that AJ wake up call to happen, where he's going to try to go get to the rim and get Edey in foul trouble. And, you know, when that's on offense. On defense, I think they're going to kind of operate the exact same, because they know Purdue's not going to change what they do, nor should they, quite honestly, based on the way the last game went. So MSU is really going to have to try and change things offensively, because that's where they can alter things here. So it'll be interesting. And like you said, you win that game, you look pretty darn good for March. So another game before that, but yeah, that's not a small one.
All right. So we talked a lot about the roster. We talked a lot about, you know, the roster building, but as we did talk about then there is a freshman class coming in that is not just any freshman class. This is one where all four freshmen were nominated for a McDonald's All-American candidacy. And two were just named McDonald's All-Americans of 24 in the entire country. So Jeremy Fierce and Xavier Booker are McDonald's All-Americans, and that's no small thing. It's the first since Max Christie, before him, Jaron Jackson and Miles Bridges, Josh Langford, Deonta Davis. Those are names that have made money, almost all of them, made money at the next level. Josh Langford with some serious health issues aside. These are guys that are going to make an impact, and having two of them be the top 24 players in the country and one of the most prestigious honors given out in high school prep basketball is not a small thing. So, Austin, what do you think of this freshman class?
Yeah, I mean, it's impossible to not get excited. I mean, the accolades for this class are kind of pouring in, both on the individual level and on the team level. I mean, MSU's class, I believe, is kind of unanimously the number three class behind Kentucky and Duke. Not bad company, despite what they're both playing like this year. I think that wake up call I talked about earlier for Izzo is it's showing that it registered in how good this class is. But to concentrate back on the you know, individual accolades, like you said, having two guys that are unanimous, you know, consensus five stars in Fears and Booker, and that are both going to be playing in this game is huge for a variety of reasons. I mean, first and foremost, it's the impact that they can have on next year's team, which I do want to obviously get to. But on top of that, it's what this does for the continuation of this program and the stacking of classes. Izzo's not a spring chicken. I know he has a lifelong contract. I don't think he's going anywhere for at least a few more years, but it wouldn't be shocking to hear other teams negatively recruit against that. Like, do you know if he's still going to be there, et cetera, et cetera. Putting two All-Americans, you know, McDonald's All-Americans on that stage, on TV, repping Michigan State, playing a ton in these games, is nothing but good for the program. And what's really, but I think what's really exciting about the class is not just these two, but it's that the other two guys, Garrick Norman and Cohen Carr, are both, I think Cohen is in the top 70 and Norman's somewhere right around 100. So for all intents and purposes, you're talking about four top 100 recruits in the entire country are all coming to play for you. And I think to go back, we talked about how the roster this year is the real problem and the way it was put together is the real problem. The silver lining of all of that is that a lot of those glaring holes that you're seeing are being filled by guys that will be able to contribute in more appropriate roles next year and then will be supported by these four new faces coming in as true freshmen. I mean, again, kind of the good news is that this year, A.J. Hogard, Jay Nakins are guys that are playing a ton. Matty Sissoko is getting a ton of experience. And even a guy like Malik Hall could end up coming back. We've seen what he can do. Kohler, Cooper, Holloman all getting exposure, provided they continue to grow on the same trajectory that we're accustomed to for Michigan State players. You could be talking about a really complete roster and a really, really exciting group of guys to watch next year where, you know, put it this way, like you said, Miles Bridges, Jaren Jackson, Max Christie, these are the names that fill those same McDonald's All-American shoes. And remember what they were like as freshmen. Not super duper stars, not best players in the country or anything like that, but these guys contributed and played big roles on each one of their teams right off the bat. And then you know, in Miles' case, came back and was an All-American as a sophomore. This influx of talent, not only just on a talent basis, but like a where they could fit with this puzzle next year and the holes that they could fill are huge. One area in particular, and then I'm going to pass it to you, John, front court athleticism. Yeah. Michigan State does not have a lot of that this year. And Hall is not the most athletic guy. And you're seeing when his median athleticism is taken out, you're talking about Cooper's fine, Kohler, not much of an athlete, Hauser, not much of an athlete, mostly defensively is where this shows up. And then you have Matty Sissoko, who is a good athlete. You're replacing, like you're adding to that Cohen Carr, who is an absolute freak. Mm-hmm. You're adding in Xavier Booker, who is, again, a super plus athlete, like an NBA type of athlete. You've still got Sissoko. Cooper, I think, is actually kind of a plus athlete, all things considered down there. You've just gone from defensively, what do we do, to defensively, oh, that's a lot of arm length and a lot of getting in passing lanes and a lot of those easy baskets that Michigan State gives up to those centers and forwards and those offenses that they run, that other teams run so easily down there. Those will not be happening the same way in the future. So that is probably the thing I'm the most excited about. And I'm excited to see Booker kind of go head to head with a lot of these dudes, but don't sleep on Jeremy Fears though.
He's he has an it factor, and he's going to have a year to learn about what it's like to be a leader from ideally AJ Hogard. We talked about the one thing. Everyone's got to get better at, become good at one thing. Well, is AJ Hogard going to become a great leader? Is Jaden Akins going to become a great perimeter defender? Is Pierre Brooks going to become a great off the bench contributor? Is Matty Sissoko going to become a great defensive rebounder? Is Trey Holloman going to continue to be okay with the minutes he's going to be getting next year and be great at not turning the ball over when he comes in and runs the point? Is Jackson Kohler going to continue to get better on defense and be great at putting the other team's backup center in the mixer on the block? Is Carson Cooper going to continue to go from good to great at using his body and getting used to the speed in the Big Ten? If all of those things can happen, and then you add in a bunch of guys who are allowed to learn and make mistakes, because they're going to make a lot of mistakes.
Yes.
You're starting to put together a really nice roster, and who knows if Malik Hall comes back.
Right.
And then you have another leader out there. So you can start to see how it all happens, but it starts this year, like we've said earlier in the pod. It's is everyone getting better at something? And that's where it starts. Because if they aren't, then you just have a bunch of really nice players that 10 years from now we'll look back at on sportsreference.com and be like, damn, MSU had a lot of studs there. Seriously.
Yeah. That's no, I fully agree. And I think maybe one of the things that the more succinct way I can put why I'm excited about next year is that those players, I think everybody gets slotted into more reasonable roles, but with this addition of talent, like you said about Carson Cooper or Jackson Kohler, if he's going into backups and putting backups in the mixer, that's exactly where he should be. He shouldn't be playing against starters. So if he can be excellent in that role where he's a better fit, that's amazing. If Carson Cooper can just be five hard fouls and eight tough minutes off the bench and maybe a little bit more in crunch time, amazing. Can Matty Sissoko just be, a anchor in the center and be surrounded by more athleticism that allows him to really just protect the rim and not have to get out and do more on the perimeter like defenses make him do right now? Amazing. I just think that there's so much opportunity for these guys to carve out more reasonable roles next year. And I just do quickly as we wrap up here, Jeremy Fears is going to put some serious pressure on all of these guards. I think Holloman is the chief among them that Jeremy Fears is coming for it, man. This kid is I think he is potentially that next great Izzo guard. I mean, everything you read about him and watch him play, he is super athletic. He can really shoot. He loves to pass the ball, and he is a outspoken leader. That's the first thing you hear about him more than anything else. And to me, that's super exciting. So hopefully that injection, this injection of youth and energy, is going to pressure these, the guys that are sticking around in the offseason next year to say, listen, shape up or ship out, because we're going to take your jobs unless you want to keep them.
Dude, we have a chance.
So I'm pumped.
Dude, we have a chance to be great. But this year has a chance to be great too, because it's so open and up in the air. So, why not start a run this week?
Hey, let's. What if we went out, John?
Oh boy, here. Thanks for sticking
and with
us,
that,
buddy. And for excusing my absence last week.
Yeah, John was a little under the weather. We lost two games. Did anybody really want to hear from us? Probably not. So we just thought it was best to skip. But we're back, and we'll do our best to be here every week from here on out. But as always, thanks for sticking with us. For John, it's been Austin. We'll catch you next week.
See you.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.